You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Aero. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
We know you're uncertain about psychics. Is this fortune teller you found on a forum legit?
Your one true love is...
me!
That's why California psychics reject 98% of the psychics who apply to work with us. We guarantee, if your reading isn't life-changing, it's free. New customers receive 20 minutes for just $20. So, experience the joy of certainty at californiapsychics.com. Experience the joy of certainty. California Psychics.
Coca-Cola. For the big, for the small, the short, and the tall. Peacemakers. Risk takers. For the optimists, pessimists. For long distance love. For introverts and extroverts. The thinkers and the doers. For old friends and new. Coca-Cola. For everyone. Pick up some Coca-Cola at a store near you.
In America, half of every dollar spent on brand medicines goes to entities who don't make them. While middlemen like PBMs and 340B hospitals drive up costs, Biopharma is investing $500 billion in new infrastructure and manufacturing here at home and helping patients buy medicines directly at lower prices. Tell Washington to end middlemen markups and put American patients first. Visit phrma.org/middlemen.
It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Welcome to Rico Bronya, episode 598. We have a lot to talk about on the Rico. The winter meetings have arrived. The rumors will go into overload. We have a New York Met going to the Baseball Hall of Fame, and we will break down every fake, made-up Mets-Yankees trade you could think of. And maybe we'll find some common ground with a Yankee fan on a Met-Yankee trade that actually makes sense. And then we can fax Brian Cashman and David Stearns and say, get it done. But let me start off with the fact that Jeff Kent is a Hall of Famer. On Sunday night, to kick off the winter meetings, we had the contemporary ballot, the contemporary committee meet and decide who will get into the Baseball Hall of Fame. You've got 16 people voting. The 16 people voting featured Hall of Famers, featured executives. In fact, I'll give you the list of guys, just so you know who was voting for this contemporary ballot. It was Hall of Famer Fergie Jenkins, Hall of Famer Jim Cott, Juan Marichal, Tony Perez, Ozzie Smith, Alan Trammell, and Robin Yount. There were some MLB executives, Mark Antanasio of the Brewers, Doug Melvin, Artie Moreno of the Angels, Kim Ng, Tony Regans, and Terry Ryan. And then there was media members and historian Steve Hurt, who's a historian, Tyler Kepner, who's a baseball writer, and Jason Stark, who I think we all know, baseball writer, ESPN, or used to be on ESPN, and all that. And so those are the people that were voting. And so much like your regular ballot, you need to get 75% of the vote, which means 12 of 16 to get in. And the ballot featured Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens and Gary Sheffield. So the steroid guys were there. Then it also featured Don Mattingly, Carlos Delgado, Fernando Valenzuela, and Jeff Kent. I honestly thought going in that the emotions of Don Mattingly being in the Blue Jay dugout, and really how time has gone on, it feels like Mattingly's case for the Baseball Hall of Fame has gotten better with looking at some of the newer age stats. So I honestly thought Don Mattingly was going to get in. I personally don't think Don Mattingly is a Hall of Famer. He had some dominant seasons, but didn't do it long enough, quite frankly. And so I was surprised that not only did Don Mattingly not get in, it wasn't even close. I mean, think about that for a second. Here were the final tallies on the votes. Again, you need to get, I guess it's 12 of the 16. I'm trying to do the 75% math in my head. You got to get 12 of 16 to get in. And Mattingly got 6. So he wasn't even close to getting into the Hall of Fame. Carlos Delgado got 9, so he was very close. And obviously, if you're not aware, Jeff Kent got 14 and got in. That's 87.5% of the vote. And so Jeff Kent is a Hall of Famer. And quite frankly, I completely agree. Completely agree. Jeff Kent was screwed because of one stat. And it's a stat that, while I'll simultaneously cite it every once in a while, I also acknowledge it's got flaws, especially when you watch a guy every day. You know, whenever we talk about Pete Alonso, we talk about how he's a really good player. Yes, his defense isn't great, but the WAR doesn't really back up what we're seeing every single day. And Jeff Kent, for years, got screwed by WAR. He did, because Jeff Kent was considered to be an average to below average to bad defensive second baseman, depending on who you would ask. And the truth is, watching Jeff back in the day with the Mets for the few years he was here, and again, I was very young, and it was also a long time ago, I viewed him as very average. He certainly wasn't Robbie Alomar defensively, probably not the best example to use with Met fans all hating Robbie Alomar, but you know what I mean. He wasn't Edgardo Alfonso defensively, I'll put it that way. But I thought he was average. But he was the best offensive second baseman, or at least one of the best offensive second basemen the sport's ever seen. And so I always believed that the stat that was holding Jeff Kent back was a very mediocre WAR. But he hit more home runs than any other second baseman, and he cleared that by a lot. He put together a really long, successful career in which, look, one of the tests is, are you ever the best player in baseball? The guy won an MVP. The guy won an MVP while beating out Barry Bonds. He had 2, 4, 6, 8 100 RBI seasons as a second baseman. He hit 290. He had an 855 OPS. And he did this as a second baseman and really gave you that consistency for 15 years. He was a Hall of Famer for, you know, he had a 17-year career. I'd say he played at a Hall of Fame level for, I'd say, 10 of those years. That's a Hall of Famer. And he never got even close with the writers. So I commend the names I just mentioned on this ballot that awarded Jeff Kent what he, to me, clearly deserves, and that is enshrinement into the Baseball Hall of Fame. As a Met fan, what do I think of Jeff Kent as a Met? I always thought he was a decent Met. I always thought he was solid. In fact, you look back at his numbers here, they were good. He comes over in the David Cone trade, so obviously he comes in trying to fill some big shoes, him and Ryan Thompson, with the two players that came over in 1992 when the Mets traded David Cone to Toronto. Look at his numbers here. 292, 14 home runs, 68 RBIs, and an 816 OPS in 1994 before the strike shortened the season. Prior to that, in 1993, his first full year as a Met, 270, 21 home runs, 80 RBIs, a 765 OPS. And then in 1995, 278, 20 home runs, 65 RBIs, a 791 OPS. I mean, these were really solid numbers. And then the trade. And if we do a Rico, and we probably should, on the worst trades in the history of the New York Mets, Jeff Kent to Cleveland for Alvaro Espinoza and Carlos Baerga have to, it maybe tops the list when you really think about it. Now, I admit, as a 13-year-old, when that trade was made, I was so excited. But you know why I was excited? Because I was an idiot. I was excited because Baseball Reference and Baseball Savant and the internet basically didn't exist. So to me, I keep thinking of Carlos Baerga as this hit machine. In fact, I remember Mike Francesa calling him that during the heyday of Mike and the Mad Dog. Yeah, you know, it's Baerga. He's a hit machine. I think of him hitting 320. I think of him hitting 315. But the reason I was an idiot is because the year he was traded to the Mets in 1996, prior to the trade, he was hitting 267, 698 OPS. Not that I was looking at OPSs, but he was hitting 267 with 10 home runs. His batting average before that, 314. Before that, 314. Before that, 321. Before that, 312. I hadn't checked Baseball Weekly enough to know that he sucked. He was toast. So when that trade was made, I remember being fired up. And then when he got here, and I checked out Baseball Weekly at the time and saw his stats flashed on the Shea Stadium scoreboard, I was like, whoa, what the hell happened to this guy? And what's crazy is Baerga was traded to the Mets at 28 years old. He was in the prime of his career, and he lost it. And Baerga, obviously, as we all recall, sucked as a Met. He flamed out after a couple of years, was only here for parts of three seasons before he was dumped as the Mets were turning their franchise around in 98, 99, and 2000. He was gone. And so, yes, Carlos Baerga is more known as the answer to the trivia question on being part of one of the worst trades in the history of the New York Mets. What I find kind of funny is that if you look ahead to the next Baseball Hall of Fame decision, your traditional writer's decision, there's likely going to be one, maybe two guys that get in. And the one guy who's going to get in is Carlos Beltran. Andrew Jones, I think, has a real chance. Personally, I think Andrew Jones is a Hall of Famer, but let's put him to the side because this is irrelevant for this discussion. There's a really good chance that the two guys that are going to highlight the Baseball Hall of Fame in 2026 are Jeff Kent and Carlos Beltran. Like, we as Met fans, it's our Hall of Fame. I mean, that's our Hall of Fame. And I know that Jeff Kent has a, look, he's not putting a Met hat on when he goes to the Hall of Fame. We know that. I don't have any ill feelings towards Jeff Kent. I mean, really, the only time I hated Jeff Kent was in 2006 when he was on the Los Angeles Dodgers. And during that divisional series in which we swept LA, I think every hit the Dodgers got actually came from Jeff Kent. He provided every base hit that the Dodgers got in that best of five sweep in which, yes, we did take care of the Dodgers. But nevertheless, Kent hit 615 in that series. But outside of that, every time he came back, and he had success against the Mets, I looked at him as squarely an opponent. I didn't view him as some evil guy in Met history. So I don't know how everyone else feels. If you remember him, if you're a little bit younger, he's just a footnote in Met history. But I'm happy for him. But I don't have any ill will towards him. Carlos Beltran is complicated to a lot of Met fans. I liked Carlos as a Met. Obviously, one of the biggest free agent signings in the history of the franchise. You could certainly argue one of the most successful free agent signings in the history of the franchise. But unfortunately, he has been defined by a moment. He is defined by one play. But isn't that crazy? Isn't that kind of nuts as a Met fan that we may be staring at a Hall of Fame induction of Carlos Beltran and Jeff Kent? And it leads me to wonder what we, the franchise that is, how do we honor these accomplishments? Like, is there a Carlos Beltran day? Does he go into the Mets Hall of Fame? They've already announced. Actually, who did they announce for the Mets Hall of Fame? Now that I'm trying to remember, I know Lee Mazzilli was one of them. I'm trying to remember who else was getting in. Did they announce him for the Mets Hall of Fame? Mets Hall of Fame 2026. Let me see who's going in. Yeah, he is going in. It's like they knew. That's right. Carlos Beltran, Bobby Valentine, and Lee Mazzilli are going into the Mets Hall of Fame in 2026. All right. So I guess they don't have to do anything for Carlos since they're already doing something for Carlos. And they probably plan that knowing he's getting in. The Jeff Kent thing is a little bit more complicated because I wouldn't put him in the Mets Hall of Fame. I'm certainly not suggesting that. Do you have like some commemoration in a way? Because again, he was a good Met. He's a Hall of Famer who I look at as a transient player. Like Jeff Kent, was he an Astro? Was he a Dodger? Was he a Giant? He's not an Indian. He's not a Blue Jay. He's not a Met. But he was on so many teams and had some really good years with a lot of different teams. And if you look at Jeff Kent's numbers and say, all right, what team do I put him in the Hall of Fame as? It's actually pretty complicated. Like he ended up spending 6 years with the San Francisco Giants. I guess it would be them. Now that I look at the years and the success, hit 175 home runs with the Giants. Yeah, screw it. He's a Giant. He had good years with the Astros, but was only there for 2 years. He was with the Dodgers for 4 years. Was actually with the Mets for the second most years compared to everybody else, but had more plate appearances with the Dodgers. Now, he's definitely a Giant. 31 WAR, 900 games, 900 OPS, 175 home runs. No doubt a San Francisco Giant. I don't know how they feel about him in San Francisco. Do they like him? Do they honor him? Do they tribute him? You know what I would do? I probably get crap for saying this from my fellow Met fans. I would have like a small giveaway honoring Jeff Kent. That's what I would do. Like a Jeff Kent, I was going to say a poster, but does anybody have posters anymore in 2026? I don't know. We got to think of something because he was a good Met. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer that, you know, was here for 5 years, which is kind of crazy to think he was here that long. 92, 93, 94, 95. Yeah, about 4.5, 5 years. He was traded in the middle of the 1996 season. So, yeah, spent parts of 5 years with the New York Mets. Either way, congratulations to Jeff Kent. Let me read an email that involves Jeff Kent and Pete Hoffman. Pete, you're involved in this email, I warn you. Ron writes, Evan, I know you disagree with me, but Jeff Kent is not a Hall of Famer. I can't go through the stats. I can go through the player, but that's not the point. My point is the Hall of Fame has turned into the Hall of Pretty Good, effing Jeff Kent. I'm sorry, sir. I disagree with you. He is one of the best offensive second basemen in the history of the sport, and I think that matters. So while in general I agree Hall of Fame of really good has become a thing, especially with a guy like a Harold Baines, even a Fred McGriff, I admit. But Jeff Kent's one of the best offensive second basemen in baseball. I don't accept it. But the question for Hoff is this. I respect the Christmas sweaters in the Hoffman Christmas Post, but is my guy a Giant? He looks 7 feet tall in the pictures. We, the Rico audience, needs answers.
Listen, my kid, my 8-year-old son took the picture. He's a short little dude. He was, listen, it's not the most flattering picture of me, but we got the best we could. That's all I could say.
I haven't even seen the picture. Why? Do you come across like really, really big, Hoff?
Well, I'm also standing next to my wife, who is not really, really big.
Oh, that's part of the thing. Like, you're, yeah. How tall are you? You 6'3"?
6'2".
And your wife is 5'3"?
Something like that. I'll give her the 5'3", sure.
You got a full foot on her.
Yeah. I do. And again, bad angle. Plus, I'm gigantic these days because I've been eating everything. It's been stress eating. I don't know if you guys can tell. But yeah, so I'm gigantic. I'm surprised you didn't talk about my penis because that was the other thing on social media.
Excuse me?
Everyone was talking about my penis.
I mean, first of all, this is a family Rico. I've got emails on Met Yankee trades, one of which is from a 9-year-old. So I need you to be very careful with this discussion. Why would someone be talking about your private parts?
Well, I guess because in the picture that we posted, you could see it, I guess, a little bit. I was wearing pants. I don't know. People had a lot to say. That's all right. All I can tell you.
Even I'm not going to read the email from the young 10-year-old who sent it in the other day. I will wait until later on in the Rico.
Toast the holidays in a new way and raise a glass of rum chata. A delicious creamy blend of horchata with rum. Enjoy it over ice or in your coffee. Rum chata, your holiday cocktails just got sweeter. Tap or click the banner for more. Drink responsibly. Caribbean rum with real dairy cream, natural and artificial flavors. Alcohol 13.75% by volume, 27.5 proof. Copyright 2025 Agave Logo Brands, Pewaukee, Wisconsin. All rights reserved.
What's good, y'all? It's Von Miller, Super Bowl MVP, SAG Master, and now your host of Free Reign. This is where NFL meets real talk. Every week, I'm bringing you inside the game, from locker room stories to league-wide headlines. You want football IQ, locker room insight, and real conversations with the people shaping the league? Welcome to Free Range with Von Miller, where nothing is off limits and every down counts. New episodes every Wednesday. Listen and follow Free Range with me, Von Miller, wherever you get your podcasts.
At Sierra, discover top workout gear at incredible prices, which might lead to another discovery. Your headphones haven't been connected this whole time. Awkward. Discover top brands at unexpectedly low prices. Sierra, let's get moving.
A little bit later on, we are going to break down Met Yankee trades. It's an annual tradition as we get closer to the winter meetings, which is there are two teams. We hate one. We love one. Aren't there trades that make sense for both? And that's why we bring in the host of the
A little
overnight.
Bit later on?
What was that?
Jeez. I said a little bit later on? I was sitting here through Carlos Baerga, through Jeff Kent, through Hoffman's penis. How many other topics do I have to sit here and wait for before we get to why you brought me in? I've been on hold for 5 minutes listening to this. What do you mean sometime later? Right now.
I actually said sometime later because I assumed you weren't there. I was doing you a favor.
No, I'm here.
Okay.
No, I'm here.
Chris McMonagle, you may know him.
How do you not know? Go ahead.
What? I'm sorry. Finish your point.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast. And if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered. It's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Ah, DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
How do you not know Jeff Kent is a giant? Come on.
What do you mean I don't know Jeff Kent as a Giant? Like, oh, that putting the Giant hat on him in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
Because he spent a lot of time bouncing around the league. He had good years with LA, had good years with Houston. But you're right. I think at the end of the day, especially when you look at the overwhelming numbers, he's a San Francisco Giant. But you don't view him as a transient player, as a guy that played in a lot of different locations with success. Like, I almost would rather not put a logo on Jeff's hat because I do think of him as a player with numerous other teams. He was clearly better with the Giants. Not going to argue that, but I think of him as a guy that played all over the place. No.
I mean, I guess I do, but I would immediately say Giant of any of them. I think that's where he had his best years, you know, him and Bonds and that team. That's when I think of Jeff Kent. But yeah, I mean, I guess I know he played for a lot of teams. And I know he was a Met for a time, but no, I think of him as a Giant more than anything else.
Are you, as a Yankee fan joining us on this Mets-Yankees trade edition of the Rico Bronya, do you have ill will towards Don Mattingly not only not getting in, but not even being close to getting in?
Yeah, not close. I mean, ill will, I don't know. I think it's silly that he only got 6 votes. I think we've had this debate for so long, and I've kind of resigned myself to the idea that he's not a Hall of Famer. You know, like when these things pop up and now he's going to be voted on through a different avenue and like then it rejuvenates it. But like for the most part, I think us Yankee fans, we've kind of just gotten to the idea his career wasn't long enough. The back injury hindered his chance to get into the Hall of Fame. And I've kind of resigned myself to the idea he's not a Hall of Famer. But so I can't say that I'm upset, but I do think, you know, I agree Jeff Kent is a Hall of Famer, but for Jeff Kent to get in and Donnie to get not even half of what you need, right? Or just about exactly half or right, 6 half. Out of 12 or something. He's not getting in. I don't know how you swayed the other half. Like, he's not getting in. He's not a whole.
No, he's not getting in. Barry Bonds is not getting in. Yeah. Roger Clemens is not getting in.
No, I know.
And
did I see that they can't even be up for the vote again until 2030 and 2031?
Yeah, one of the new rules on this contemporary ballot is that if you get less than 4 votes, you're not off the ballot entirely, but you get to skip the next one. And then if on that second one that they're back on, I think in 2031 is the year, if again they're less than 4 votes, they're done. And the truth is, they are done. Because
they're done, yeah.
The writers had their say for 10 years, and Joe B would always make a big deal. The writers, they got their agendas, and he's not wrong. But the beautiful thing about these ballots is it's not writers anymore, okay? You got Hall of Famers, you have owners, you have other media members. Like, you have a different mix of people voting. And if they're giving you the same result, then we just have to accept not enough people think they're Hall of Famers. Whether I think they are or not, we are now looking at an eclectic mix of people who are all agreeing with each other in saying they're not Hall of Famers. And I say the same about Don Mattingly. Like, for all of the people screaming and yelling about Donnie, I mean, how many different groups of people need to say no before we just shrug our shoulders and say, all right, it's not happening?
I think we've reached that level. I think today was the final straw. I don't think we really have that debate anymore. He's not going to be a Hall of Famer. It sucks. We know he was one of, if not the best player in baseball for a 3 to 4 year at max span, but it wasn't a career worthy of the Hall of Fame. We can argue with it all we want. It's just now it's pretty much a proven. And it doesn't matter, though. I don't get hung up on it. Never have.
It really doesn't.
He's our guy. You know, we think of him the way we think of him.
Yeah. If you love Don Mattingly, you love Don Mattingly.
That's it.
So the beauty of today's podcast is twofold. Number one, fake Mets Yankees trades. And number two, to reminisce. Because it was a year ago, the Sunday, as the winter meetings were beginning, where we attempted to do a Mets-Yankees trade, Rico, and then it morphed into a Juan Soto wait party, and then it morphed into Juan Soto signing with the New York Mets. We've had a lot of discussions about Juan Soto on the Rico. We actually did a whole episode breaking down every home run he hit, and if it was a clutch home run, a non-clutch home run. So I ask you, a year later as a Yankee fan who took it very hard, you were very classy on the Rico when we went back to you, on the Juan Soto wait party, talking about your feelings, drinking your tears. It is a year later. We know what happened to the Mets. We know what happened to the Yankees. They didn't go as far as they went. They had their plan B. How do you feel a year later about ultimately what happened with Juan Soto picking the Mets over the New York Yankees?
I mean, I'm still depressed about it. I still wish he were a New York Yankee. I've never made any qualms about that. I think he's a great player. I wish I said it then. I would have done everything. I would have given him sweets. I would have given him whatever he wanted. I think it made the team last year. You could argue last year's Yankee team would have been worse, I suppose. Or, you know, I think the pivots, especially losing Gerrit Cole to this for the season, having Max Fried there, where they wouldn't have been able to add Max Fried if they kept Juan Soto, and some of the different ways the season went. You could argue that that team ended up being a different but better team than it would have been with just adding Juan Soto. But I think as we look now and moving forward, as we're trying to hope as Yankee fans that, you know, this one can become available, or maybe San Diego's looking to shed payroll and we get another superstar from there. Like, I think you need great players. And so I'm still bummed that he's not a Yankee. We're looking to replace him with players who aren't good, as good as he is. And it's still very frustrating that we got one brief year that did go to the World Series, but it ends up becoming a footnote in an overall time period of underachieving and disappointment that still frustrates me very much so.
I think what was so difficult is replacing him for a year doesn't seem that crazy. Like, oh, we spent this money on Cody Bellinger or this money on Max Fried, and look, we had success. Right. I think the challenge with replacing Juan Soto always was, how do you do it for the next, I'm not even going to say 15 years, because look, the back end of that contract may not be good, but how do you do it for the next 8 years? Yeah. How do you do it while he's in this prime of his career? I mean, last year it was Bellinger and had a really good year. Now he's a free agent and there's no guarantee he comes back. So it's always, how do you replace someone for the entirety of that contract when you could have had him, as compared to just a year here and there?
No, 100%. Having another superstar player at his age and being able to probably, you know, take that mantle too, because we hear a lot of, you know, you got to go for it right now because this is the Aaron Judge window. This is the Judge and Cole window. You elongate the window when you have that superstar who's going to be, you know, 30, right? 29, 30 when we feel like Judge's career ends. So then you have that, you go right into the Juan Soto era of Yankee baseball, the second Aaron Judge is no longer Aaron Judge. So that's why I felt that way. And, you know, people, you know how it is, but like I was getting, oh, you're waffling. You said you want him, but you said this team is better. I said in the one this year, I think we did it. The Yankees did a decent enough job replacing him, but for the next 15, it's going to be very difficult. I mean, that guy is special. He's still at that age and he could be that next young superstar and he's not here anymore. So I'm still very bitter about it. I think, you know, Juan Soto obviously settled in and had ultimately a very good season, finishing third in the MVP voting. I still think something was up in the first half of the year for whatever. I, you know, it looked like he had less exuberance and joy than he had with the Yankees and other stops for whatever reason, not because he necessarily missed being a Yankee, but for whatever reason. But ultimately, while being maybe a little bit less clutch than he's been, he had a great year and he's going to have another great 10. Like, that's who he is. So
I'm convinced, and I remember saying it at the time, and I think that I feel even stronger about it all these months later, that the lack of exuberance that he had, the lack of the shuffle, was a lack of confidence at the plate. And I don't know if that was related to the contract or the pressure or what was going on, but you could kind of see it. And then as the summer months came, and obviously Juan put up some massive numbers, even if he was still missing those clutch moments, he started to have that shuffle. He started to show the Juan Soto arrogance, if you will. Good arrogance, not a bad arrogance. So I think those first few months was probably just a lack of confidence. But by the end of the day, by the end of the season, he was Juan Soto.
No. And what's funny about it, too, because it gets so much play, because for me, like, you know, I'm a baseball junkie. I love baseball. I love watching baseball. Like, when people say the season, you know, shouldn't be 162, I go, you're right, probably 163. Like, that's me. So part of it is, I loved watching Juan Soto play baseball. Like, I don't know if there's another hitter that I've ever watched that gives you an insight into that chess match between pitcher and hitter. Like, he wears it on his sleeve. Like, he knows if he was just beat, and he lets you, like, feel, man, I just missed that one, more than any other, like, player I've ever seen. And I love watching him in that way. And I think what was frustrating, I would imagine, for Met fans, and I could, like, just being a somewhat independent as I could be from being a Yankee fan and losing him, but, like, watching him, what frustrating was is, like, you lost that. Like, it wasn't as much. Like, you got, not only were you getting this great player, but you were getting this, like, exciting, great to watch. The at-bat of Gattis that he hits to send him to the World Series was one of the great at-bats ever because of his body language and because of who he is. And then for the first month and a half, 2 months, you don't get that. And it became, like, a massive story. And also just, you know, it's not the Juan Soto that you want to see. And I think he's one of those players that are box office. I love watching his at-bats. I wouldn't miss a Juan Soto at-bat for my life, you know. So, like, that's what was frustrating about it. But as we said, it came around, and I have no doubt he's going to be a great player moving forward.
Over the course of this episode, we'll go through some fake Met Yankee trades. Received a lot of emails to RicoB@gmail.com. None of them include Juan Soto. So I just want you to know that there's no
– I have a couple.
Do you really?
Yeah. Do you know – hold on, I just want to get his name right since we're on the topic. Do you know that Caden Kent, Jeff Kent's son, is in the Yankee farm system? So if you want to get a reprieve – and get another shot at this thing.
Wow.
Right. Gladly. He's a shortstop. He's projected to be ready by 2028. He's got 40 overall, 45 power. So, you know, if you guys are interested, save some money. I know those, you want the back end of that contract years, then you want to make sure you shed some payroll in the next 5 or 6 years from now. That's very important for the Mets to make sure that they don't have any money in 4 or 5 years from now on the books. So I'm happy to, you know, take him off your hands if you're interested.
Done. Jeff Kent, Cade Kent for Cade Jeff Kent, McNeil. Yeah. Done. You want that? McNeil for Kent?
How about Luis Torrens? And I get a right-handed backup catcher. I'm
sure you'd like Luis Torrens. That's one that worked out. I want to start off with an email from a Yankee fan who listens to the Rico all the time. He started the email by saying, "Hey, Evan, I'm a diehard Yankee fan who listens to almost every Rico. So you want to hear his trade?" Because this is, you would think this is a good one. A Yankee fan who listens to the Rico all the time. And right. I needed this to be the first trade for you. The guy's name is Baruch, I think is how you say it. Baruch, B-O-R-U-C-H. So hopefully I'm pronouncing it right. He says the New York Mets should trade the New York Yankees David Stearns for Brian Cashman.
You know what? Amazingly enough, no. I'm good.
Stearns has been cute with Uncle Stevie's money, and it hasn't worked. Brian Cashman is a good enough GM who can and will win with unlimited funds. Yankees, on the other hand, have been doing the same thing for 16 years. Stearns was successful in Milwaukee, and now the Yankees need an analytic savvy GM with Hal's budget getting in the way every single year. Makes a lot of sense.
The way he put it is about as much sense as you can make of it, that's for sure. We'll see about Hal. I think Hal is really, it's going to be an interesting off season for Hal Steinbrenner here.
I have a trade sent in by Mike, and I mentioned this briefly on Evan and Tiki a few days ago because I really do think this makes a lot of sense. And I'm so curious your opinion on this. It is a straight up trade. Mm-hmm. It is Mark Vientos to the Yankees for Jason Dominguez. Your thoughts?
It's not crazy. I mean, they're both bad defensive players, right? At least Vientos got the right-handed power that, I don't know if you watched Yankee Hot Stove at 9 o'clock. That was like Brian Cashman's main focus. Like, what's the issue with the team right now is that they're not balanced enough. So he's going to go sign some bench right-handed hitters to go balance out the lineup. Sounds great. I think I might do it. I'm trying to think how many years of control, what would be the difference in control? Because Dominguez did come up around the same time, but he didn't play as many games. So
Mark Vientos is a free agent in 2030, and Jason Dominguez is a free agent in 2031. So there's one extra year of control on Dominguez versus Vientos.
I mean, Dominguez is my guy. I have a whole collection of his baseball cards. But I don't think it's – I think I would probably do it and then look to improve left field. I would probably do it. I would see if I could do better for Dominguez, but I do think it's – I think it's a fair swap.
What is always challenging with trades is we watch a player all the time, mm-hmm. and it's impossible to know how do other teams view that player in terms of value. Like, right. what is Mark Vientos getting on the open market coming off a bad year? And Jason Dominguez is a great question because it was probably 2 years ago in which he was one of the top prospects in baseball. He's not a prospect anymore. You know, he's a Major League Baseball player who lost his job last year. He's still incredibly young. I mean, he's going to be 23 years old going into the start of the season. So he's certainly not a bum, someone who doesn't have value. And so to me, what makes this trade perfect, like I'm going to be an IBO for a second, and then obviously I'll tell you what I think as a Met fan, is that it fits each other's needs.
Yeah.
I mean, the Yankees could use a right-handed bat, as Brian Cashman was talking about. And how about a right-handed bat who could play first base or third base? I mean, right now, the Yankees are staring at Ryan McMahon and Ben Rice. Now, Mark Vientos is not going to confuse anybody with Mike Schmidt defense or Brooks Robinson defensively at third or Rico Bronya at first, but he can play both positions and he's a right-handed bat. And obviously for the Mets, they need outfielders. I mean, that's clearly something they could address. Dominguez is bad defense. I know it scares some people off, but I would also say just play the guy every day in left field. He'll get better. I don't know if he'll ever be a Gold Glover, but I think he can become average to decent. Yeah. So I would do it. And for any Met fan, because I got some pushback from Met fans saying, oh, come on, defense, defense, defense. I'm like, well, what the hell's Mark Vientos? What is he, Gold Glover? I mean, they're both liabilities defensively. They just happen to play positions that fit the other's needs. And look, the positive of Vientos is he's actually done it at the major league level on a consistent basis. Dominguez is still trying to prove that.
But I guess the difference, like for the Met fans screaming defense, defense right now, I don't think Vientos will be playing much defense, right? I mean, you view him as your DH, so he won't be playing defense. So you're impacting, you know, you bring in a left fielder to replace Nimmo, who's, you know, arguably just as bad defensively now. Younger, improving as opposed to declining. But right now, I don't know what to do. I mean, and has more speed, but is, I can tell you this, the one thing for sure, coming in on balls, coming in on low looping line drives, he is god-awful. Like, that's his main kryptonite, is he is bad coming in on balls. But yeah, I mean, you're right. If it's, you could play him at third base for McCann, that could become like a platoon, play him at DH. You know, Stanton's going to miss a month somewhere at least. So I think it does fit. And you're right. I mean, we saw Vientos not only just through the regular season, into the postseason. Like, I understand last year was bad, and I'm not saying he's going to be a great player, but we've seen a hell of a lot more than Dominguez has shown.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's, I think the risk in a trade like this is the
one's going to bomb and one's going to be successful.
Yeah. Like if one of them, when the Mets and the Yankees have made trades in the past, there's usually not much, you know, superstar factor. Like when David Justice gets traded for Mark Guthrie or whatever the hell that trade was. I'm trying to remember actually. David Justice for Robin Ventura. And then we traded David Justice for Mark Guthrie. Correct. That was what it was.
Yes.
But like you had two aging players.
Yeah, I know. But that, I mean, you make that trade in 1997, that's one hell of a trade.
Absolutely. Oh, no. Yeah, that trade was made 5 years earlier. It was a blockbuster. Yeah. I remember being pissed off. So the Ventura gets traded to the Yankees. David Justice comes to the Mets. Right. And my first reaction was I was sort of excited, like, you know what? Maybe they can get a big year out of Justice. I remember what he did for the Yankees in 2000. He's basically the reason the Yankees won the World Series. Let's be honest. That was one of the – that actually was Brian Cashman's greatest – July or June trade. I think it was late June, but we'll call it we'll call it a trade deadline deal. So I was pumped for Justice to be a Met, and then they traded him to the A's for Mark Guthrie, a left-handed reliever.
Yep.
Felix Heredia from Mike Stanton, I think was another one. So usually or Lee Guterman for Tim Burke.
Right.
Some of the trades that are made.
This episode is presented by State Farm. Having insurance isn't the same as having State Farm. It's like needing the protection of an offensive guard on the football field, but getting an elementary school crossing guard. Sure, they're both guards, but you can only trust one to keep your quarterback safe when the game is on the line. So don't settle for just any insurance when there's State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Wayfair's big sale is returning. Get ready for Way Day. For 4 days only, score up to 80% off all things home with free shipping on everything. From October 26th through 29th, score Wayfair's best deals. Like up to 80% off area rugs, up to 60% off mattresses, up to 60% off bedroom furniture, and more exclusive doorbuster deals. So mark your calendar and shop Way Day starting October 26th at Wayfair.com.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Now, I want you to be careful here, Big Mac, because This is from Sam, and Sam is 10 years old, and he worked very hard to create a list of Mets Yankees trades. So if you don't like the trades, right, can you be respectful?
Yes. Okay. You're asking, can I not call a 10-year-old an idiot? Yes, I can manage.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Hoff would not be able to do that. He would not be able to help himself.
No, he wouldn't.
Sam writes,
you know what it's like for Gina, you know, for giants who like to expose their penis in pictures. So it's tough for them.
It's his second reference to Pete Hoffman's private parts.
Well, I mean, I walked right into it. Well, not his penis, but the conversation. You guys were talking about as I came on.
All right. This is from Sam. Sam writes, hi, Evan. I am Sam. I'm 10 years old. I love the podcast, and this is my second email. Damn, I must have missed the first. I feel bad now. I hope I wrote back to the first. I was listening to the Friday Night Rico when I heard you say you were making up Mets-Yankees trade podcast on Sunday. That's right. With Chris Big Mac McMonagle, who for now you can hear in overnights. For now. That may change. I immediately started working on this email and started thinking about some trades. I came up with a few trades. Some I like more than others. I love the podcast, and it would mean a lot if you could say this Sunday on the Rico. So he came up with four trades, all right?
Wow.
Okay. I'm going to read all of them. The Mets receive Jason Dominguez, Spencer Jones, and Chase Hampton. The Yankees receive Mark Vientos and Jeff McNeil. Trade number one.
Okay.
Trade number two. The Mets receive George Lombard Jr. and TJ Rumfeld. And the Yankees receive Luis Angel Acuna and Ronnie Mauricio. Trade number three. The New York Mets receive Cam Schlittler. Oh,
sure.
The Yankees receive, you're getting a big return, don't worry, Jonah Tong, Brandon Sproat, AJ Ewing, and Ryan Clifford. And then finally, the Mets receive Pico Khan, Carlos Lagrange, and Spencer Jones. And the Yankees receive Kodai Senga and Jeff McNeil. Do you have a favorite of the bunch, Big Mac?
I would think at least the Cam Schlittler trade has somewhat of a value I could understand. The other ones, not so much.
By the way,
I'll give Sam credit, though. He went like he didn't go player for player. Like, he dug into, you know, Lagrange and some of the other Yankee prospects. I was very impressed with that. Yeah,
no, that was good work. Sam, you did a hell of a job. We appreciate the email. The Schlittler one, man, like, that is way too much. I know that Cam Schlittler is the apple of everybody's eye, and he deserves a lot of credit. What he did in the postseason against the Red Sox, I know you went crazy on your show saying it was the greatest Yankee playoff performance of all time, some BS.
Playoff.
What was that?
Playoff.
Yeah, Don Larson pitched in the playoffs. It's called the World Series, and he threw a perfect game.
World Series. Well, playoffs really weren't a thing in baseball until 1995 when they incorporated the wild card, but that's okay.
So you're saying that when one says playoffs, we have to exclude the World
American
Series?
Is the American League playoffs and the National League playoff, and then there's the World Series, and it is all encompassed by postseason, correct?
Okay. I'm making sure. I'm spotting you here. So World Series, not playoffs. Okay.
Correct, yes.
By the way, even with that said, like, I'd put it up there because Schlittler's performance against the Red Sox was epic. I would still take Roger Clemens' start in the ALCS against the Mariners above it in 2000. I'd put that above it.
Can you live in the moment for a second?
No.
Are you allowed to live in the moment for a second? When I do that video and they beat the Red Sox, they win two in a row. I thought they were going to be sent home again at the hands to the Red Sox. I thought Boone was getting fired. That's what that game meant a lot, believe it or not, even though they end up losing to the Blue Jays. Like, that game meant a lot. And for him to just throw fastballs by everybody, like, that's the other thing, too. It wasn't like some crafty performance where he's fooling them with split fingers and he was like, he just reared back and threw fastballs by everybody. It was like an incredible performance.
I think, unfortunately, living in the moment doesn't work because we end up judging things based on what happens next. Fair or not, that's just the way it is. Like, I am convinced that the Aaron Boone home run, which is an epic moment in Yankee history, it dies all these years later for two reasons. Number one, you lost the World Series a couple of weeks later. And then number two, you choked a year later in the ALCS against the Red Sox. And I think in a weird way, the Aaron Boone home run doesn't get judged today the way it was judged in the moment, in the offseason right after it happened. And so I think in the case of Schlittler, what he does next and what the Yankees do next, but really what he does next will really help judge what we think about that performance, because ultimately they got knocked out in the divisional series in a very forgettable season. So, yeah, and I'm not even saying all that's fair, Big Mac, but you know that's the way our brains work.
I don't think so. I think the moment, like, and again, since we're doing Mets and Yankees, and this isn't to crap on you, but like the Endy Chavez catch gets ruined because you lost that game, you lost that series. Like, I think Aaron Boone hitting a home run against the Boston Red Sox in a game that they were down 5-2 and walks it off against Tim Wakefield and sends them to the World Series, I think that stands on its own, and I don't think it's lessened or cheapened by losing the World Series or what happened in the 2004 postseason. Like, I don't think so at all. I think that moment stands on itself. You can't lose the game. You know, Mike Mussina coming into that game, the three innings from Mariano, like all of that gets lost if you don't win the game. But I don't view it any differently. And you know, personally, that's a special one for me. It was right around the time my father passed away earlier that year. So maybe I'm biased on the situation. But I think as long as you make it through the series, win the game, those moments can stand the test of time. I don't see why, like, you have to pile off a championship where nothing matters.
No, I don't think that's the case with the Mets. I think that's the case with the Yankees.
Okay.
I'm being honest. Noticed that, you know, talking to Yankee fans over the years.
I mean, I think the flip play by Jeter is still pretty well thought of. They end up losing that World Series.
That's a unique season. That I think 2001 is very unique because of September 11th and getting as far to the, I mean, they got to the seventh game of the World Series and lost this hard fought series. It's just, I don't know why 2001 almost feels unique in that regard. Nicholas did something really interesting, Big Mac.
Okay.
He decided to ask ChatGPT to put together a fair Mets-Yankees trade.
He must really be an Evan Roberts fan.
What was that?
He said he must really be an Evan Roberts fan. That's Evan's go-to move.
That's my go-to, yes.
That's your go-to.
I do it every once in a while. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
No.
Nicholas wrote to ChatGPT saying, "What is a fair and realistic trade that could be made between the New York Yankees and the New York Mets in 2026. All right. This is verbatim with ChatGPT said. All right. Here's one fair and realistic trade between the Yankees and Mets. Something I think could plausibly happen in 2026 based on roster needs, organization philosophies, and recent reporting. You ready?
Yes.
Jeff McNeil for Spencer Jones and a low to mid-tier pitching prospect. And so Nicholas writes, either ChatGPT is high or is a Mets fan or both.
Yeah.
And I would agree. Like, come on, ChatGPT.
No.
You got to do better than Jeff McNeil for Spencer Jones.
He was the best minor league hitter last year. He's got, you know, he had a great year. No, Jeff McNeil, who, you know, let's be honest, they're ready. If anyone would take them off their hands, they'd get rid of him. No, that's not one I would do.
I think in the past when we've done these, I've always said Jeff McNeil actually does make sense for the Yankees. He doesn't anymore.
No, he doesn't.
I think they're too left-handed.
Yep.
They've got infield options. They've got versatile infield options. So when I was writing some Met Yankee trades down, I didn't even attempt Jeff McNeil in these trades because I just don't think he works anymore.
No, I definitely agree. I don't think Jeff McNeil does. And there was a time where he did. I don't think he does anymore. I remember Glaber for Jeff McNeil was a conversation we had. Honestly, with the two teams, I don't know if there are a lot of things that work between these two teams, quite honestly. It's like the Vientos trade is perfect. And outside of that, like, I don't know if there is a ton, to be honest.
I agree. I think Vientos – see, I was trying to think of it both ways. Like, all right, who on the Mets would fit the Yankees and who on the Yankees would fit the Mets in a realistic way? And Vientos, to me, just reeks of somebody that fits the Yankees because of that right-handedness and the fact that he plays first and third base. You know, and you just look currently at the Yankee positions and you say, oh, that makes a lot of sense. And obviously, the Mets need outfielders. I said this to you during the wild card series, and I thought it made so much sense. I planned on bringing it up to you on this Rico I knew we would do, but now it's been outdated because Brandon Nimmo's a Ranger. But I thought Brandon Nimmo for Carlos Rodon was the trade that made sense. Two bloated contracts, you bring in an outfielder who doesn't make that much money per year. Like, that's kind of the beauty of Nimmo's contract. or at least I thought it was. It was only $20 million a year. Yeah. And I don't know how you feel about Carlos Rodon, because he does have an injury that's going to probably derail the first few weeks of the year, whatever. He has been up and down throughout his career. He's coming off a really good year. You're deep in pitching, and certainly the Mets could use pitching.
Yeah. No, I would be open to move him. Absolutely. For Nimmo, I mean, it's pointless now because Nimmo's not on the team, but I would absolutely be willing to move him. And that's like part of it too. Like, you got some starting pitching depth, right? You got young, controllable starting pitching, or you have Carlos Rodon who might be able to move. That's something you could see going Mets to Yankees. I don't know what comes back necessarily without, you know, already signing like Brooks Raley, like a lefty reliever. I was thinking of would be someone the Yankees could use right now. Tim Hill is really, I know Hedrick is, you know, has been on and off the team, and they have him right now lined up to be part of the bullpen, but they could use a really good lefty reliever. I said Luis Torrens, they could use a really strong right-handed catcher. But like outside of that, one of the infielders, right? Either Mauricio, who I just saw hit a walk-off home run tonight or something. I just saw him on Twitter.
In the winter league, yes.
Yeah, in the winter league. So he hit a walk-off, but like Mauricio, although he's left-handed, or Vientos, or that kind of thing. But what would you be willing to give me now? Because I'm open to moving, but how does it work now?
Yeah, it's one of those deals where I'd almost have to wait to see how free agency and the trade market goes. Like, what makes Carlos Rodon's contract appealing now is that there's less time on it because, you know, he's already competed now in parts of three seasons. So when he initially signed a six-year, $162 million deal, I think most of our reactions was, wow, that's crazy. Well, half of it's gone. And so you see a 33-year-old left-hander coming off a really good year. What I would ask anyone, I'd ask the Met fans is, would you give that guy a three-year contract? And the answer is, oh, yeah, probably. Yeah, you gave Sean Manaea a three-year contract. Why not? And so I think his contract actually looks appealing. My only issue with Carlos Rodon is, I've been saying this a lot on the Rico, I want reliability. He is, I know the last 2 years he's been reliable because he's made the 32 starts and he's been good last year, better than the year before. But I'm so scared off by the down of Carlos Rodon. Like, it can be so bad. Yeah. But I have a tough time matching up on a player. Because the Mets have no outfielders. They have an excess of young position players in the infield. Like, you talked about some of the names. Yeah. And Acuna, a Mauricio, a Vientos, a Beatty. I don't know. I'd almost rather just sign a free agent to a 3 or 4 year deal without giving up one of my young pieces.
No, I mean, the way I would think about Rodon for me would be if the Yankees are looking at the idea of how much young starting depth they have and are looking to shed payroll. So, like, if I were to look at the Mets, I'd be like, well, what do we got in the farm system? Like, what prospects would you be willing to trade me for Carlos Rodon? Because I don't see a player-for-player type thing working out. It'd have to be – you mentioned, like, the young kids, but, I mean, I would probably even go deeper than that and say, you know, what – like, I would look for some of your deep starting pitching or
– right.
I mean, that's because I would view it now as like a salary dump, because I agree. I don't know what people think. I don't know what the value is for Carlos Rodon.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast. And if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a 2-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Holiday PSA from DSW. This is your reminder that shoes are a gift. Literally. So unwrap something good, like boots that inspire your next big adventure. Or cozy slippers that give you an excuse to stay in. Or sneakers that feel like pure joy. Because shoes aren't just shoes, they're exactly what you wanted. Let us surprise you, so you can surprise them. Find shoes that get you, and everyone on your list, at prices that get your budget. At DSW stores or DSW.com.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
So, and this is a great email. I'm not even going to give you an opinion. I'm going to read the email from Milton. Straight up trade. And I think it fits the whole, I don't know what this guy's value is, though we hear the Mets are going to trade him. Kodai Senga. Like, what is Kodai Senga's value? He doesn't make that much money for a starting pitcher in this day and age. He was awesome until he got hurt, and he's mostly been good as a starting pitcher. He's just very unreliable. Straight up, Kodai Senga to the New York Yankees, giving you even more starting pitching depth, and coming back to the Mets, assuming he agrees to it because he would need to, Trent Grisham. Grisham for Senga. Grisham at $22 million. Senga's at about $15 million. So it's a $7 million savings for the Yankees. But yeah. Senga's got another year left on the deal. Kodai Senga for Trent Grisham.
Yeah, I don't think I would do it. I wouldn't do it.
That's amazing to me.
Why, you would do it?
No.
From a Yankee standpoint?
Because if I'm hearing you incorrectly, obviously correct me. You seem to think it was a mistake to give Grisham the qualifying offer and be stuck on a one-year $22 million deal. Mm-hmm. I'm giving you, or at least Milton is giving you in this trade, a $7 million savings, okay? So that's for this year. Yeah. And the starting pitcher who, like I mentioned, when he pitches, is really good. And you could use starting pitching depth knowing the beginning of the season is going to feature no Gerrit Cole and no Carlos Rodon.
Right. I mean, I guess for the beginning of the season, I'm also getting a pitcher who can't, you know, has to throw every 6 day, hasn't been able to stay healthy over the last 2 years. And the last we saw of him was so bad he couldn't come back and pitch even though he was healthy. So, like, or at least healthy-ish. Healthy enough to throw, just not good enough to pitch. And right now, thinking about it with the New York Yankees, they already have one outfield space to fill. And I know, you know, again, for $22 million, I felt like it was a lot, and that opened them up to more things. I don't know what losing my center fielder and gaining $7 million does for me right now with the New York Yankees. Like, I just don't know. And they have pitching depth. I don't view Senga as someone I can trust, so I would say no. But I'm not happy with the Trent Grisham for 1 year for $22 million. I just don't know if $7 million relief for a pitcher who couldn't pitch, hasn't stayed healthy in 2 years, can only pitch every 6 day, is the kind of, like, that's not the relief I'm looking for. And now I have to go with that $7 million, get two outfielders.
Yeah. I have no idea what Senga fetches back for the Mets. Like, I've been saying this for a while, that Kodai Senga is not pitching for the Mets in 2026. I think it's been pretty obvious that they're down on him, whatever the reason is. They don't love him. They are shopping him aggressively. And I wrestle with, all right, what are they getting back? Are they getting back a prospect? Are they getting back a bullpen arm? Are they getting back an everyday player? Like, I honestly have no idea, because he's a weird guy to try to value, you know, because he's good. But look, you made the points. Yeah. And then they sent him down to the minor leagues. Yeah. His final numbers is funny. Like, if Kodai Senga was pitching with the Texas Rangers or with the Anaheim Angels, where we barely saw him and we were just checking on his numbers, we would say, wait a second, the guy made 22 starts and pitched to a 3.02 ERA. What's the problem? No. Like, we would be so confused by this, but obviously watching him every day, we saw what the problem was.
Yeah, no, we did. But I mean, look, I still think he could be good. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that he could come back next year and have a solid year. I think that's the kind of stuff he has, and that's the kind of pitcher he's proven to be when healthy for the most part. Same thing with Severino. Like, it's a little similar to Severino where, you know, he was injured a lot, but for the most part, whenever he was on the mound, he was a great pitcher up until the last half of his last season. The Yankees, Mets take a chance on him, and for the most part, he's turned his career back around to what you expected him to be. So I could see that happening with Senga.
Besides your Jeff Kent's son for Juan Soto trade idea,
yeah.
Do you have any other Met Yankee trades you would like to present to the Rico audience?
Yeah, I had I thought, you know, since, again, you're looking to save money on the back end and, you know, Soto is going to be the superstar, you know, him and Lindor hate each other. It's obviously a huge problem. I was thinking Lindor, right? He can come play shortstop. I was thinking something along the lines of Jason Dominguez, Anthony Volpe, Luis Gil, right? Maybe even a Clark Schmidt to go along with it.
Wow. Okay.
Bring him over here. Play shortstop for the New York Yankees. Get rid of that. Get that cancer off the team.
Oh, jeez.
Fighting with Jeff McNeil. No, Soto hates him.
So that'd be a good one. I would love to give you a response, but you threw so much, you know, crap in there.
Well, I know it's not going to happen. I'm having fun, but like
that. I have said before.
I'm trying to think of people who would fit the Yankees. They could use, I would love to take the veteran shortstop. So like I would, if depending on how the Mets feel about him, I would be open to making a big move for Lindor.
I have said before, and I'm not sure if David Stearns goes this far, but when you come off what happened to the Mets,
right,
everything needs to be put on the table.
Nah.
It doesn't mean I'm committed to trading Francisco Lindor. I'm committed to trading this guy, but I would listen on anybody, like even Brandon Nimmo. I didn't think that they would trade him because I didn't think there would be an offer out there good enough to trade him. And obviously I didn't even love the Marcus Semien trade. Right. So I'm open to it. Like, I don't think that him and Soto can't coexist. I don't buy that crap for a second. But right. I think, again, when you come off of what happened to this team, it is irresponsible to not put all things on the table. Mm-hmm. But what I've wrestled with Lindor, and I mentioned this a few Ricos ago, and I'll use the Yankees as an example, is what would have to be there for me to say yes? Realistically. Right. Like, a realistic trade where both teams would be up for it, that I, as a Met fan, would say, yes, I'm going to pull the trigger, and I'm going to trade Francisco Lindor. You're right. Of course the Yankees would go after him. Like, why wouldn't you? I mean, right. He is a superstar player still in the prime of his career. Right. So you should trade for him. But I look at your roster, and I'm not putting your roster down. I would say this about a lot of rosters. No. I don't see it. Like, well, I think I would want
Dominguez. Ben Rice gives you left field first base.
I was about to say Rice needs to be in the trade. And obviously that's not going to be a deal breaker for you, but I'm like trying to think of the guys I like. And so, yes, Jason Dominguez would be one. Ben Rice would be the other. You want to give me a shortstop back? I don't need a shortstop back. I got all sorts of shortstop prospects. I'm going to play Jet Williams at shortstop. I can go back to Ronnie Mauricio at shortstop. So you can keep your Anthony Volpe. But I'm like, all right, Ben Rice, Jason Dominguez, and then I really got to make it hurt, man. I got to make it sting, and I think that would be Cam Schlittler. Yeah. So, and then a fourth. Maybe it is George Lombard Jr. So, but then I'm like, all right, am I making that trade? Like, you just gave me a lot. I just asked for a ton. Ben Rice, Jason Dominguez, Cam Schlittler, George Lombard Jr. Would you make that trade, first of all, or did I hurt it? Did I hurt you too much with it?
Yeah, I think you hurt me there too much. I can't give you all of that. I'm open, you know, someone's got to come off the table there. Like, it's either Rice or Schlittler for sure. I'm not giving you both Rice and Schlittler. You could pick which one, I guess. But also, like, what are you going to, like, you're taking a lot of money off the books. And if I'm giving you Ben Rice, then you're not, and so then the thought is you're not signing Pete. Like, where's the money going? Bellinger and Tucker? I'm just trying to think of the whole thing through. But, like, as far as, like, the Yankees, I would do it for, I mean, I would give you a lot. I would be willing to give you Dominguez. We'll start with a package of Dominguez and Schlittler and move on from there.
All right. Look, I appreciate that you're at least offering Cam Schlittler. I thought since he authored one of the greatest postseason performances in Yankee history, you would completely take him off the board.
I would probably rather give you Dominguez and Ben Rice, but I would have to consider it. I mean, I think, you know, you're talking about one of, I know he's older and he's in a lot of money, but I mean, trying to do something to, you know, dramatic here. He's a switch hitting, you know, Gold Glove caliber. I know last year had a little bit of a fluky, poor defensive season, just a couple of men, you know, a couple of weird gaffes. But I mean, he would change that Yankee lineup immensely. He would change who they are instantly.
Yeah, I think where the Met fan would be intrigued is what you brought up with the money. That, right. Okay, I've got an outfield prospect in Jason Dominguez. I mean, he's not a prospect anymore, as we talked about, but an outfielder where the jury is still out, and Dominguez, okay. I got Ben Rice, who I could DH or play first base. Okay, I add this young stud to my rotation. That's exciting. But I think the excitement would come from, I've just freed up a lot of money. Does that mean Kyle Tucker? You know, does that mean, you know, whomever, whatever star player you want to go after? But it is not realistic. No. And I don't even think it's realistic on the Yankee end of things. Like, I don't think at this point
they would
absorb that.
No, they probably wouldn't. They probably wouldn't look to absorb that money. But so that's what I'm saying. Like, what would you want for, like, Brooks Raley? You guys picked up his $4.5 million. Like, that's what I would look like. Brooks Raley. What would you want for Brooks Raley? I would like. I don't even know. Like, I don't know how it works.
It doesn't fit because the Mets are still building a bullpen. And so right now with Raley and Minter and Devin Williams, that's their bullpen. And obviously there's a lot of other young pieces that will be a part of it, but we're still building it. So I would have no interest in trading Brooks Raley. It doesn't mean I wouldn't in the right deal.
That's what I'm saying.
Nothing jumps out at me.
I was going to say, because I think we've done this exercise in years where there was a lot more fun to be had.
Yes.
Like, I was really like, you know, I don't know how much time, I'll be honest with you, I didn't invest that much time into it. I'm exhausted. But like the 40 minutes that I spent like really racking my brain, it wasn't nearly as like, I felt like last year sitting down to do it, even though I thought it was dumb because we were waiting for Juan Soto to sign. And I'm like, I'm going to sit here and make you an offer for, you know, David Peterson, like that's what we're going to do while everyone's waiting with bated breath for Juan Soto. Like, it felt dumb, but it was a hell of a lot easier to come up with like a handful of trades. I felt like this year I really was like, I don't even know. The teams just don't match right now.
I give you this one. This is from Zach. Zach writes, Camilo Duvall for Luis Angel Acuna. Move helps the Mets because their current bullpen is unpredictable and they could use some reliability. The move helps the Yankees because their defense has been one of their glaring issues the past couple of years. Acuna provides stability and flexibility all around the infield. That is a good, interesting trade.
I don't see it, no.
You wouldn't do it?
No.
Camilo Duvall wasn't even in your circle of trust at the end of last season.
Absolutely, but he's been a closer for how many years in San Francisco? I expect him to have a bounce back here. And, I mean, Acuna, what is he going to do? I mean, Jazz is good defensively.
Play everywhere.
They have Caballero to do that. Like, I don't think he moves the needle for me to give you, like, right now, well, he wasn't in the circle of trust last year. Going into the season, he's the eighth inning guy. Like, that, whether we like it or not, we'll find out if that's a good decision or not, and if they'll have to pivot from it. But that's where they are right now. And for a utility infielder to be my second utility infielder, the Caballero, like I don't see it fitting for the Yankees.
So the one trade that I think we could all agree on after this exercise is Mark Vientos for Jason Dominguez. That is the trade that makes the most sense.
I think it makes the most sense. It's the most interesting. It helps both teams in their weaknesses. And I would be intrigued by it. I'd be totally honest with you. The Yankees need right-handed power. We did see him have an incredible year 2 years ago. And listen, I know we're all high on Dominguez. I get it. But here's the thing. Are the Yankees. Like, that's the other thing, too, because we'll see. If they don't do anything in this offseason and they allow him to be the starting left fielder, I'd be surprised. I know they're talking like it now. Even Brian Cashman talking, and they are downplaying this offseason, man, as big as I can ever remember them downplaying an offseason. You mentioned it, too. I did it as well. The first Yankee hot stove, not that that's the be-all, end-all of the gospel, but usually there's like some sort of, they could do this, they could do that. And it was pretty much like, I don't know. I think the Grisham thing really hurt their appetite for anything in the outfield. And if you hear them connected to anyone, it's probably just agents. Don't think about it. Like, great.
Yeah.
So, and then even Cashman today. So we'll find out. But I'd be surprised if they go into the season with Dominguez in left field. So I would make the trade mainly because I don't know the impact Dominguez is going to have on the team. I think they're looking to shop him anyway, and I think that'd be an interesting fit for the Yankees.
Yeah, ultimately, I'd make the trade, too. I don't know if every Met fan agrees with me. I'm sure I'll get a lot of hateful emails, yeah. RicoB@gmail.com, but I would make that trade from a need standpoint because I think Vientos is now blocked. I don't think he has a role with this team,
yeah.
So I may as well find out about a Jason Dominguez playing left field basically every day because the Mets need to add two outfielders. That's the reality.
Right.
I know they want Carson Benj to be the opening day left or center fielder, but just because you want something doesn't mean it happens. I mean, he's still a young player, so there's no guarantee. But we shall see. It'll be an interesting time. Big Mac, I appreciate you not only coming on, but putting in 40 minutes of effort trying to create Met Yankee trades. That's 36 minutes more than I thought you would, so I do appreciate it.
I mean, well, you know, I'm probably exaggerating, but it was somewhere around there, 25 to 30. I Googled your roster.
Here's the real question,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know the answer to it, and maybe you know the answer to it. What is the betting favorite to be the team that Craig roots for in his fan reveal in 2026?
Yeah, I don't know. That would be an interesting one. I wonder if Craig is going to do that again and have the whole party, the announcement, balloons, the whole bit. That was fun. I don't know. I don't know. How would I know? Why would you ask me that question?
I don't know. It's just I was thinking about it as we get closer to the start of the year. Well, thank you, Big Mac. Obviously, no you problem. Can listen to Chris on WFAN, sometimes on the overnight, sometimes at other times of night. You know, really depends.
I'll be on
the day.
2 a.m. If you're watching live, I'll be on at 2 a.m. today to talk about how important that win against the Atlanta Falcons was. And how it led into a wonderful performance against the Miami Dolphins. And, you know, they could be picking third, but they're picking seventh.
I will tell you an interesting note from today's Jets-Dolphins game, Sunday's Jets-Dolphins
game. Oh, you were at the game, weren't you?
I was at the game with my five-year-old Spence. I was not planning to go to this game, but Spence had such a good time the previous week against Atlanta, he wanted to go back. So we went back. And coincidentally, we were sitting in the same section, just five rows in front of the legendary Joe Beningo.
Get out of here. How about that?
Spence met Joe, had a nice brief conversation with Joe. And one of the badge of honors that Spence will forever have is that with about 6 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, Joe got up and said, "Bro, I'm out of here. This is a disaster. Yeah. See ya." And I looked at Spence and said, "Now that Joe is gone, would you like to go? You know, it's a blowout. We're getting our butts kicked." And Spence refused and stayed for the entire game. So Spence Roberts outlasted Joe Beningo at Jets Dolphins on a cold Sunday afternoon at MetLife Stadium.
That's not bad to outlast Beningo at a Jet game. That's pretty good for a young lad of Spence's age. But yeah, I'm not surprised. I'm surprised Beningo made it that far. To be totally honest with you.
I mean, he could have left him in the first quarter.
Taylor was out of the game, I figured that was it. Once the great Brady Cook came in, that was the end of it.
Yes, it did not go well. Well, thank you, Big Mac. We appreciate you coming on.
All right, no problem. Thanks for having me. I appreciate
it. Thank you, sir. We will be doing Ricos throughout the winter meetings. I know David Stearns will speak. So what we do here on the Rico is we listen to what David says and respond to it. So make sure you are subscribed. You are subscribed to the FAN YouTube page, and we will keep you as posted as we can throughout the winter meetings. And obviously, if there is breaking news within a reasonable amount of time, Hoff and I will Rico. So we appreciate you listening, downloading, and subscribing to another edition of Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.
Doug. Here we have the Limu Emu in its natural habitat, helping people customize their car insurance and save hundreds with Liberty Mutual. Fascinating. It's accompanied by his natural ally, Doug.
Limu? Is that guy with the binoculars watching us?
Cut the camera! They see us!
Only pay for what you need at LibertyMutual.com.
Liberty, 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 liberty.
Savings vary. Underwritten by Liberty Mutual Insurance Company and affiliates. Excludes Massachusetts.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second, and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
So you want to start a business. You might think you need a team of people and fancy tech skills, but you don't. You just need GoDaddy Aero. I'm Walton Goggins, and as an actor, I'm an expert in looking like I know what I'm doing, even when I don't. And I like the sound of starting my own business, Walton Goggins Goggle Glasses. But I'm an actor. I don't know what I'm doing. I needed help. GoDaddy Aero uses AI to create everything you need to grow a business. It'll make you a unique logo. It'll create a custom website. It'll write social posts for you and even set you up with a social media calendar. I didn't even realize I needed a social media calendar. GoDaddy Aero will take your idea that sounds good and make a business that looks like you know what you're doing. GoDaddy Aero can get your business up and running in minutes. You know what that sounds like? It sounds like a plan. Get started at GoDaddy.com/Aero. That's GoDaddy.com/AIRO.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.